locally owned and operated. Really, Cambridge 105. You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
Hey, it's all going to work out. Here's sports.
Yeah, it's that time of the week again. 6 o'clock on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. Good afternoon and welcome to Summer Sports Week. Mike's here.
Hello.
And Brian's here.
Good afternoon.
And I'm here as well. It's football all the way today. It's going to be our fully comprehensive and totally objective review of the Premier League season between now and 7 o'clock. But first of all, it's time for the sports news. England are chasing an unlikely 360 to avoid a one-day international series defeat against New Zealand at Southampton after Martin Guptill scored a magnificent 189 not out. This afternoon against a lacklustre England bowling attack. Mike has the latest score. Are they still batting?
Just about. England are 2-2-2 for 8.
2-2-2. Bit of Richie Beno creeping in there.
So what's happened? Is Trott still in? Give us a bit of a rundown.
Trott's still in. He's looking to get his 100. He's running out of partners. He's currently on 84 and Anderson is batting with him on 4.
Thanks, Mike. In tennis, Serena Williams remains overwhelming favourite to win the Women's French Open title after a comfortable victory over Italy's Roberta Vinci. Williams dropped just 4 games today and will face former champion Svetlana Kuznetsova in the quarterfinals on Tuesday. Kuznetsova came through a much tougher test, defeating Angelique Kerber 6-4-3, 6-6-3. And later on, Suzanne Longlon, 2008 champion Anna Ivanovic, takes on last year's Wimbledon runner-up Agnieszka Radwanska. In the men's draw, home favourite Joe Wilfried Tsonga made short work of Serbian Viktor Troicki, winning in straight sets to make the quarterfinals, where he'll play the winner of the game currently on court, Philippe Chatrier, between Roger Federer and Gilles Simon. Federer taking the first set there. Number 32 seed Tommy Robredo is through to the last 8 after coming from 2 sets down for the 3rd consecutive match to beat Spain's Nicolas Almagro, the first time in the Open era that such a feat has been achieved in Grand Slams. The Premier League has apologised to Chelsea after an error resulted in a story being published on their website claiming that Jose Mourinho had been appointed as the new manager of Chelsea. Although the return of the special one is widely expected, the Premier League said they had no prior knowledge of any movement or announcement regarding Mourinho. England take on Brazil this evening at the newly renovated Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. Roy Hodgson's side are short on strikers, with Danny Welbeck joining Andy Carroll and Daniel Sturridge on the sidelines, and Theo Walcott could lead the attack if Jermaine Defoe fails to recover from an Achilles problem. Luis Felipe Scolari's Brazil will be looking to impress on home soil ahead of the Confederations Cup, which starts in 2 weeks' time, before the World Cup finals also take place in Brazil next year. And England's victory over Scolari's side at Wembley in February will give Brazilian players an extra incentive tonight. The game kicks off at 8 p.m. GMT. In county cricket, Nottinghamshire batsman James Taylor fell 3 runs short of a century on day 3 of the county match against Sussex. Taylor, looking to regain his England place, helped Notts to a lead of almost 300, 1 day left to play. In the Yorkshire Bank 40 over competition, Leicestershire looked like losing their 100% start to the season after being bowled out for just 220 by Middlesex, and Ryan Tedder-Scarter scored 180 off just 98 balls as Essex racked up 368 for 7 from just 40 overs against Scotland. Canadian David Veilleux won the opening stage of the traditional Tour de France warm-up race, the Critérium de Dauphiné, today. Riding for the French Europe Car team, Veilleux attacked his breakaway companions with 50 kilometres to go and held on for his first World Tour victory. Chris Froome and his Sky team dominated the race and looked comfortable throughout, with Froome coming home in 5th place as he continues his preparations for next month's Tour de France. And Johnny Brownlee won his 2nd consecutive World Series triathlon, with victory in Madrid, coming home 50 seconds ahead of Olympic silver medalist and current series leader Javier Gomez of Spain.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
Just about squeezed in the sports news there.
A lot of news, Chris.
Just an update on the tennis, Chris. Gilles Simon is actually set all against Federer.
He's won the second set.
Yeah,
good
he levelled that one all.
Well, Simon's obviously had a very good season, so not surprised to see him push Federer today. It'd be interesting with obviously Djokovic and Nadal in the other half of the draw.
Yeah, and the home crowd cheering on, of course, another French player.
Of course, yes, they have Tsonga through.
Yeah.
And can Simon join him?
There's quite a few Frenches in the French Open, so
French tennis scene is healthy at the moment.
It is quite healthy, isn't it?
A lot of good players.
Who's that bloke that they're all very keen on?
Gael Monfils.
That's it.
No, he's looking good.
My son, come on, my son. That's what I shout when he's on television.
That's very good, Brian.
Thanks.
Okay, it's 5 minutes past six. Chris, Brian and Mike here with you until 7 o'clock when Alan takes over with Rock Lit. And we are going to be looking at the Premier League football season that finished a couple of weeks ago. We've been saving our review of the season for a bit of a slow news week. It's not actually been as slow as we thought, but we got it anyway. And Brian, where do we start? I guess I think we should start with the team that won the league, and obviously the man who topped off his glittering career with his final Premier League victory. I thought we needed a musical tribute to him. You'll get it in a minute.
I've got it.
Hello.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose.
That's right, Sir Alex Ferguson won his, 133rd English Premier League title. Amazing stuff from the big man, and well done to Manchester United. They actually had a worse season than they did last year. Last year they had 89 points and a goal difference of plus 56, and this season 89 points and a goal difference of plus 43. So, they struggled in comparison with last year, but unfortunately this year had no competition at all. Everyone else was a bit rubbish, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair summary of the season. It was far from a classic season, really. I'm not just saying this as a bitter Manchester City fan, but I was hoping for, obviously, as defending champions, probably looking for a bit more from City and, you know, the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal. In the end, it was a kind of cruise for Fergie and the Old Trafford boys there. And having watched them play quite a few times, they didn't impress me that much, to be honest.
Well, they seem to win the title with a few of their players having actually disappointing seasons, like Ashley Young,
Nani,
Valencia and Nani.
Anderson.
Yeah. All kind
Does
of,
he still yeah. count as a player?
Yeah, that's right. So it's 13th title, though, for Fergie, end of 27 years, and what a great way to bow out, though. So we've got to give credit to United. I think the story of the season for me, as far as United are concerned, was there were a number of games where they came from behind. There was a 3-2 win, I think it was the second or third game of the season against Southampton. Of course, they're new boys, just promoted, and put up a great fight, and they just clinched that one, as usual, as is their way, United sort of in the dying sort of few minutes.
Well, in that game, Manchester United were 2-1 down, and then Van Persie scored in the 87th and 90th minutes. You're right. I think I agree with you. I think probably up until December time, United seems to be winning without playing well. They won at Anfield when a lot of people said Liverpool were the better team, and I think they beat Arsenal when they didn't play particularly well. And I think in November they were 2-0 down against Aston Villa and came back to win 3-2 with Chicharito. But then second half of the season they seemed to just
They went on quite a long run. Actually, I think the story of the season is people probably have forgotten that United were top of the tree in November. So really, they stayed at the top throughout the entire season, really, almost all of it. And that's not the most exciting, I guess, sort of Premier League race in history. United fans won't complain, but it was kind of boringly comfortable. I mean, the decider really was the game at the derby match, where I think there was only like 5 points in it, and Nasri stuck out where he turned his back on a Van Persie free kick, and that was the winning goal. It sort of deflected off Samir Nasri Joe Hart, and that win really pretty much sealed United's win with a couple of months, few months still to go. So,
and kind of tells you everything you need to know about Samir Nasri's contribution to Manchester City's title defence.
I mean, he got a lot of stick. He got a lot of stick from Arsenal fans when he left for the money. But you know, it's not like he's the only player in footballing history to make a move for the money. Some of them tried and failed. Odin Wingy, for example.
Cashley goal.
Tried his best. Cashley, exactly, yeah. So, I think he showed a bit more form towards the end of the season, Nasri. But by then, it was kind of too little too late. I mean, you think about United, they're just annoyingly consistent. Even if they're coming from two goals down or whatever, they still always get the results. So
are we doing them a disservice? I mean, they won the league by 11 points, and we seem to be saying, oh, they were just boring and no one else was good enough. I mean, Michael Carrick had a good season by all accounts, and Robin van Persie obviously was great, and Rooney didn't seem to dip in and out and had a few injuries and didn't really do a great deal. I mean, but were there other players in the Manchester United side that were, you know, really top draw, or was it just that they were solid, well managed, well organised, and like said, kind of in the few games where they were in trouble, they managed to come up with some late goals?
I think a little bit of both. I think De Gea, I think, probably had by his standards, an excellent season, I think, especially towards the end. Second half of the season, I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah, because there were a few question marks over his form, weren't there? Certainly last season.
Yep.
And, you know, young keeper. And certainly he looked a lot more solid this season, definitely. So, I mean, that's when you got a decent keeper. But living up to the likes of Schmeichel and so on, and Van der Sar is quite tricky. I mean, United have struggled with goalkeepers recently, so I guess United fans will be pleased that they think they've found somebody now that, you know, can hopefully stick around for a while. And he is a good keeper, definitely. I think probably Van Persie's the key to United's success, because I remember before the season started, there was a lot of talk about where Van Persie was headed. And I was teasing my Arsenal sort of my friends who are Arsenal fans that he was obviously destined to go to City, and I was absolutely gutted when he signed for United. And looking back, you know, he probably was the difference, really. He was one popping up with the goals when it mattered, and, you know, they're winning those close games. So somebody like him in the side just gave everyone a bit of a boost. So, yeah, you know, Van Persie, De Gea, and of course lots of cameo appearances.
He did that when he signed. Do you reckon he came through with about 20 Cadbury's boost bars and just like went around symbolically,
so quite literally,
gave everyone a boost? Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be nice. I'd like to think some players would do that at some clubs. Kind of got a topic. Oh, sorry, I got it wrong. my English not so good. But lots of cameo appearances from the likes of Giggs. You know, his form wasn't great, but still got quite a few games this season.
Scholes
as well, you know, and of course Scholes was his last ever season for the club, but they still featured a lot. And, you know, you're probably right, the wingers were probably the disappointing feature for United. Chicharito probably as well did well, popping up with a few goals, important goals. I was reading a really angry comment on a thread about how is he allowed to have the name Chicharito on his shirt. It's it's just sheer sort of arrogance that he can have, because it's an extra letter. Hernandez is one fewer letters. It's over ripping off the fans. But apparently it's the same price in the club shop, so I'm not sure where this guy was going with that. But yeah, you know, very, again, young player. And it'd be interesting to see what happens with United next season, of course, with Moyes.
I was just going to say Patrice Evra probably deserves a mention as well. He's very solid.
Reliable.
What is going to happen next season? David Moyes is obviously going to be the manager. I mean, one thing I am really interested in is that a lot of Manchester United fans, actually not just Man United fans, but a lot of people in general, when managers are getting sacked after 6 months in the job, are saying, oh, look at Man U, they stuck by their man when he had 3 or 4 years where they weren't doing particularly well, and it paid off, and he's ended up there for 30 years and had loads of success. And, you know, if they lose 4 of their first 10 games this season, are Man U fans still going to be singing that tune?
I think they should. I think David Moyes has the potential of actually doing really well at Manchester United. He just kind of needs a bit of bedding in, needs a bit of patience from the crowd probably as well.
See, I don't think, even if it all goes like really badly at the start of the season, I think United fans, they're so used to having stability with a long-serving manager, that I don't think they will turn on them. I think United fans are very loyal to their manager. I mean, you know, they've not had to endure the sort of managerial merry-go-round that most other clubs have had. And the average tenure now of managers in the Premier League has suddenly sort of dropped quite drastically. But I think, you know, no one's expecting Moyes, I don't think, to quite, live up to Ferguson straight away, because it's basically an impossible task. So I think they'll give him quite a lot of time. And also, United, it's not like suddenly they've lost half their players and half their money. They're still a big club with big players. They'll still be there or thereabouts, is, I believe, the phrase favoured by commentators.
No, I agree. But
it's whether they'll, you know, win the league, or I'd like to think they won't.
Well, that's it. Is that the measure of, you know, if United comes second next season, you know, is that it for Moyes? Does he have to, or is it a case of, you know, because I understand what you said. It's obviously, if he comes second and they get 85 points and they're just not quite good enough, then you think, okay, Moyes has done well, he'll continue to develop them. But are we still living in that world in football now, or are Manchester United expecting to win the league?
I think for the first season, I think they've got to be kind of happy with Champions League qualification and probably a good cup run. And you know,
yeah, that's so the other thing, of course, because they'll be in the Champions League, and you know, in that respect, Moyes hasn't got a lot to live up to, really.
That's so true. Actually, that could be a saving grace.
Yeah, so
didn't make the quarterfinals this
but
year.
Of course, Moyes has got no experience at all for the Champions League, so that will be the interesting thing to look out for, as far as you know, United are concerned. But
you're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
I thought you'd finished there.
Sorry,
but before we continue, we should just let you know what's coming up. About 6:45 today, about half an hour's time, Brian's got our special archive feature for you. He's going to be reminiscing over a classic sporting event from the past. Give us a clue. We're going to drop a few clues
for
the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, I've got a number of clues. Yeah. My first clue is this sporting event was won by a player ranked 125th in the world.
Okay, 125th in the world.
That year.
It's a snooker. I always think of snooker first. Mm-hmm. There's often the odd upset in snooker, isn't there? Well, he says it probably isn't. yeah, okay. That's my... Okay, well, I reckon we wait for more clues, unless anything's jumping straight into your head, Brian.
Well, I know the answer.
how about you, Mike?
Well,
there's two of them. It's not as easy as it looks, this radio game.
Well, golf springs into mind, but Brian knows nothing about golf, so...
Okay,
could be a short feature.
I've chosen Medina again.
Mardina,
yeah. Yeah, so that was my first clue. 125th this player was ranked.
Okay.
When he won.
Okay. Right, next clue coming up shortly. Mm-hmm. And back into the Premier League. Manchester United 89 points, Man City 78, Chelsea 75, Arsenal 73. The top four that most people would have expected, or would people have thought, will people be disappointed in Tottenham only coming fifth?
Tottenham fans will. I mean, I think before the start of the season, that would have been the top four, really. I think the surprise package there probably midway through the season was Arsenal, who got off to a pretty bad start, didn't they? Mm. And there was all that talk about Tottenham finally has the changing of the guard in North London, and Tottenham fans were all rather confident. And as I said the other week, never bet against the prof, because Arsenal, of course, came good towards the end. I mean, it's pretty tight. That was one of the more interesting stories of the season.
I mean, Arsenal won 8 and drew 2 of their last 10 games to Pippen by a point. So, you know, I think even Tottenham fans were kind of saying, oh, fair play, that like disappointed, but they did well. 72 points is a good season for them, and Arsenal just had an amazing run at the end.
Their last kind of 10 games was kind of mostly down to Theo Walcott's performances, I think. I think he played a very good second half of the season.
Yeah, he was, yeah. I mean, they got off to their worst ever start to a Premier League campaign, so given that, you know, they were playing catch-up for most of the season, and, you know, Tottenham with a very strong team this year and probably player of the season, which I think we might come on to later, but, you know, it was looking for a while like maybe it was going to be Tottenham's year, but credit Wenger. You know, he was under a lot of pressure this season. He got a lot of stick from the fans. And, you know, talking about the Old Trafford faithful, where's the loyalty for the Arsenal fans, at the Emirates? Because you'd think, I mean, I know that they, I guess their beef seemed to be that Arsenal was a club that was more about making money, so selling like Van Persie, of course, before the season started, and they were, but, you know, comfortably getting into the Champions League pretty much every season. It's not a bad, I mean, you know, you ask fans of Stoke or Reading or whoever, they'd settle for that, really.
Now, you mentioned Theo Walcott. Should we be excited about Theo tonight doing a number on Brazil? Or I don't know. I mean, this time of year, the friendlies England play, they just all seem knackered, and you just think, what's the point?
Yeah, and Theo Walcott is not actually, you know, trying to get a new England contract at the moment. So I think he might struggle.
Yeah, it's funny that, because the same you could be said of Adebayor at Tottenham.
That is true.
Who suddenly popped up from nowhere with about 3 games to go, and with a few sort of crucial goals. But it'd be interesting.
It's called doing a Fellaini.
Doing a Fellaini.
But it's kind of the reverse of that, isn't it? Because Fellaini seems to play really well just as the transfer window is still open, and then his performances seem to dip once the transfer window closes. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so how about...
Chelsea? You want to talk about Chelsea?
Yeah, how about Chelsea?
Well, interesting, because obviously, you know, Di Matteo was there at the start of the season. Didn't last very
seems
long.
Seems a long time ago now.
Yeah, it does.
Speaking of manager loyalty,
But they had a bit of a slump in league form and controversial replacement at Stamford Bridge. Rafa Benitez came in as interim manager, and they actually finished on a high. I mean, from again, like Arsenal, really, they came good at the end with a trophy. Well, unlike Arsenal, actually, but you know, their season finished much better than you might have predicted, and the fans, I think, were forced to eat their words mostly, or change the banners, at least get the paint out and cross out the out bit from the Rafa out.
We've spoke
signs.
Quite a lot about this. I mean, like Rafa out. I mean, they said when they took him on, he was going to be out at the end of the season. You don't
Seems
need to be
pointless,
campaigning
yeah.
against him. He's going. You know, that was all set in stone from the beginning. And it's just hilarious to me. They appoint an interim manager. He wins in the Champions League, and then within a couple of months, he gets sacked. Then he gets a permanent contract,
yep.
And then a couple of months later, they sack him and bring another interim manager. And it's are they just going to keep bringing in interim managers until obviously they've now reached that point where Jose Mourinho's free and they're able to stick.
But
with
even
what
that,
they want.
You could argue that isn't a particularly logical move. I mean,
were they waiting for Pep originally? And then
possibly,
ended
yeah. Maybe
up having to go from Mourinho
maybe they
instead?
Maybe they bet the house on Guardiola, and then having failed to get Guardiola, they thought, well, Mourinho was popular. Let's try him again. But you're right, you know, Di Matteo, what else did Di Matteo have to do? He won the Champions League. Admittedly, you know, it's kind of a bit of a steal from Bayern. But even so, the champions, you know, they were up till quite recently, obviously, the Champions League champions. You know, it's like the best thing you can win in football, and he's still got the boot.
Well, I don't quite concur with that. I don't think Di Matteo has ever looked like he's a great manager. He was the right guy at the right time, and he did really well to win them that competition. But I'm not saying they should or shouldn't have sacked him. I'm saying I'm surprised they actually gave him the job in the first place. You know, he did what they brought him in to do, bring a proper manager in to take you forward. But they were waiting for either Guardiola or Mourinho and didn't really know what to do while they were waiting. They're just twiddling their thumbs.
Agreed.
Yeah, but you know, again, fans at Stamford Bridge, presumably, they got a trophy. He won the Europa League against Benfica. It's pretty good, you know.
Back in Champions League for next season.
Yeah, exactly. Finishing third. You know, we've already said that the actual Premier League race was a bit of a non-starter, a bit of a dud. But they were safe in third, got a trophy in the cabinet. Benitez silenced the critics, really, by the end. They were actually banners saying, thanks, Rafa. I think he's done his reputation.
Yeah, which is easier to do once when you know he's going. But yeah. But why weren't they doing that for a bit longer?
I wonder if they changed their mind and given him a contract for next season, if the fans would have still been happy with that. Possibly not. He's suggesting that maybe they, because he was going, it's like, thanks, you've won us a trophy, great, but, you know, cheers, and now we'll get someone decent in.
Goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but he started off very unpopular with the Chelsea fans because of his time at Liverpool, and finished where I think they kind of slightly warmed to him, really. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay, so that's the business end dealt with for last season's Premier League. So it's time to kind of have a look at some of the highs and best performances, best games, best players, best everything shortly. First of all, I think it's probably time for another clue to the archive feature, Brian.
Oh, yeah, okay. So I've got another clue here, which was the winner of this event said, "This is destiny. God wanted me to win this game. He sent the reins."
Yeah, I think I have an idea of who it is.
An inkling.
Yeah, but I don't want to say, obviously. I'd spoil it for all of you out there listening.
I could do it in an accent, which would help. This is destiny. God wanted me to win this game. No, he sent the reins.
So you've done it
deliberately.
In an accent, but not the accent of the person
who
said
it. The
clue
is it's not the right accent.
All right. It had confused me because I had an idea.
Okay.
Is it tennis?
Oh, it might be, yeah.
Ooh.
Hold that thought, Mike.
Oh.
Okay, so best bits. Now this is a bit more cryptic. So what am I referring to with this little clip?
You're referring to this.
Oh, I am. Very impressive, Brian. Yeah,
that doesn't work on radio, does it?
No, it's the Gareth Bale heart celebration. Groove is in the heart, and I think we'll have a discussion about some of our favourite players of the season now. But Bale has certainly got to be mentioned by anyone when talking about the 2012-2013 season. He had a stunning season, and probably scored more last minute equalisers and winners than Manchester United did.
He was
seemed
He was okay. Yep, he was okay.
Well, the talk for the first half of the season was Bale, great player, but tends to fall over quite easily. And then towards the end of the season, it was like Bale, great player, and oh my God, he scored another amazing goal in the last minute.
So Bale seemed to switch, kind of, you know, in moments in games, his brain used to switch, and he just kind of decide to score a goal. And
it did, that's exactly what it looked like, though. It was like Bale, a bit bored now. The rest of the team aren't doing much. Adebayor's not playing very well. No one else. Dempsey's not having a great season. It's like, okay, all right, okay, I'm going to go past three players and belt it from 40 yards, which he did sort of quite regularly.
Yeah. It was almost, I mean, it's like maybe Ronaldinho about 10 years ago, or, you know, other great players. It is like he was kind of egging on his teammates to do it. It's like, and then it would get to the 87th minute, and he's like, "I've given you a chance now. Give me the ball. I'll do it. Don't worry." And yeah, he just seemed to be able to switch it on at will. And
I think what was the game? Was there a Champions League game that he where he really sort of lit up?
Was it against Milan?
I think it probably was, wasn't
Inter,
it? Because doing it on the European stage.
Well, that was the year before, wasn't it? When they were 4-0 down against Inter, and he scored a hat trick. They lost 4-3. That's probably the first time that kind of people outside of this country really sat up and took notice. And now, obviously, they've had another. You know, they've had quite a few European games, and everyone knows about him now.
Yeah,
and obviously, all of Wales's big games in major tournaments. You know, it's only a matter of time before he does it on the world stage and wins the World Cup and all that
for Wales. Yeah. Well, I noticed the story in the back pages yesterday when I popped in to the studio. Was it this morning? In fact, was that Real Madrid are apparently coming in with an offer, but that's going to be the talk of the summer. I'd be surprised if he did stay. I don't know. I heard a rumour that he was planning to sign a new contract, but it's like football. It's just endless soap opera.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's,
I think,
just
what Real Madrid,
rumours and nonsense.
What Real Madrid tend to do is kind of put in a big bid for someone to kind of unsettle them, and then a year later, or they'll sign them, and you'll think, hang on, they bid for them last season. It happens a few times. They know they've not no chance of getting in this season, but maybe they're just kind of laying the foundation, sowing a seed, ready for 12 months.
Plus, if he's kind of signing a new contract, maybe he's putting these rumours about Real Madrid. You know,
you reckon, just to bump up the offer.
An extra, you know, £20,000 a week wouldn't go amiss.
It's been a long time though since a really good British player went abroad and did well. You know, obviously we've got Joey Barton on loan at
I think you've been a bit hard on Bex there.
Yeah, no, that's true. But was a while ago, though.
I'm joking. No one really has. I mean, even people like Steve McManaman, who won things
at
Real Madrid, didn't. You know, he wasn't the main guy. He was just in the squad and scored the odd goal. Lineker for Barcelona.
I thought you meant Grampus 8.
Luther Blissett at AC Milan.
Now you're going back a bit.
David Platt went to Sampdoria.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of majors, I think the World Cup a few years ago, there was maybe the United Arab Emirates or someone was the only, or maybe North Korea, were the only countries in the World Cup that had more players in the squad that were based in the home country. Like, England traditionally don't tend to have many players playing abroad.
Yeah.
Obviously, because Premier League's best league in the world, isn't it?
Yeah, so. Premier League, definitely best league in the world. So I think I would really like to see Bale go somewhere like Real Madrid, get a regular spot in the side and do really well, because I think that would be great for, you know, just for British football in general, because we're a bit insular.
Is he not too much like Ronaldo?
I'd quite like to see a team with both of those players in. I think they can switch wings, can't they? I don't know. I mean, you know, Real Madrid are the sort of team that would come in with a silly money offer. And if you're a Tottenham fan, I was talking to a guy at work on Friday. He said, look, I can't lose. Either we keep Bale, in which case, you know, we've got one of the best players in the world, or we sell him for a ridiculous amount of money and we get three or four really top players. The only pressure there would be on, you know, whether VS Boas would spend that, you know, wisely and get some good replacements. But even so, I think Tottenham fans are pretty happy about the whole situation.
I think Tottenham are really a little bit annoyed to miss out on Champions League, but in general kind of happy that things are looking fairly healthy for them.
Yeah.
Well, so we're talking about players of the season. I mean, who have you got noted down as your like top players of the season, or you know, favourite players of the season, whether they were necessarily the best or not, it's irrelevant. I think your favourite players.
One of my favourite players of the season was probably Hazard at Chelsea. I remember.
Oh, he's good.
He's very, very good. I know Mata got a lot of the plaudits for, but there were, you know, there was Mata, Hazard, and who's the other one? Oscar at Chelsea. All very brilliant set of midfielders there. And of course, I remember United were chasing him quite hard in the summer, and they ended up with Kagawa. And Kagawa never quite, I think, compared to Hazard. I think you could see what they missed out on there. Because, I mean, Kagawa's a good player, but he scored, I think, 4 goals in one game, was it? But not a patch on Hazard. He's just a great player to watch. Amazing touch, great technique. So he's definitely one of my favourite players of the season.
I've got a couple. Frank Lampard, I think, deserves a mention.
Oh, see, that's a good shout.
It is.
So yeah. Breaking the Chelsea goal-scoring record. And, you know, after the beginning of the season, probably a lot of people didn't expect him to do much this season.
Well, even feature at all in the team. But, you know, he played 21 times, scored 15 goals. I think can't be sniffed at.
And a nice fella as well.
And he is a nice fella. And there was talk about him not being offered a new contract this season. So,
yep. You're right, he's a pro's pro.
And the other person I have jotted down is Leighton Baines.
Good one.
Not only because he's
play every single game, every minute of every game.
Yeah, he's kind of solid, you know, dependable. You know, he's arguably one of Everton's most creative players as well. But he also has the best haircut in the Premier League.
He does. He looks like there's a guy at work who actually, for some reason, he doesn't follow football, but he's obsessed with Leighton Baines. So who is this Leighton Baines fellow? He's a really great chap. But yeah, and also broke into the England side, and I reckon he's probably our best. Well, it's him and Ashley Cole, aren't they, fighting for left back?
Well, yeah.
It's a shame they're two of our best players. Both play in the same position. Yeah.
I think we should also mention Suarez, who, I mean, obviously various sort of controversies aside.
Probably tops a lot of people's heroes and a lot of people's villains of the season.
But there's no doubting he is a really top striker. I mean, some of the goals he scored this season were incredible. So, you know, if you're thinking about just good footballers, Suarez has got to be on that list.
And then do you want to hear my two?
Yep. You've got a smile on your face, Chris.
You know what's coming.
I think we do.
Adam Lafondra.
Oh, yeah.
What a guy. Adam Lafondra, playing for Reading, obviously. He had that brilliant period in the middle of the season. He wasn't starting any games. He's just one of those great players that all the fans love because he's just totally unfit. Just a bit rubbish, but can put the ball in the back of the net, has that instinct. There was a game Reading played Everton in September. Reading were absolute rubbish in the first half, should have been about 5-0 down. For some reason they were only 1-0 down, and then Lafondra scored two in the second half, and Reading kind of started making a bit of a habit of those kind of comebacks for a couple of months. 2-0 down against West Brom, getting booed by their own fans, scored in the 82nd, 88th and 90th minutes. Lafondra got the equaliser in that game. And then literally a week later, they're 1-0 down against Newcastle. Lafondra comes off the bench, scores with his first touch to make it 1-1, and then scores again 6 minutes later for 2-1. And it just, you know, at that point, you're reading out the sports news kind of every week saying, and Adam Lafondra came off the bench to snatch a dramatic turnaround for Reading. And I was just, yeah, oh, this guy's brilliant. Not a great player by any means, but he's a very good finisher and instinctive finisher. And lit up the middle part of the season for me. And I wanted
I wanted to
briefly mention Michu, who I thought was superb for Swansea. We were going to talk about kind of bargain buys of the season in a minute, and so we'll come back
you
to
just
him.
Have. I think you've covered well, that. You've nailed it.
But I did want to mention Romelu Lukaku for West Brom. Chelsea player on loan at West Brom last season. I saw him play a couple of times. Extended highlights of a couple of his performances, and he just looks the business. If he's back at Chelsea next season, which presumably he will be, he could. You know, he looks like a kind of Drogba-esque player that Mourinho could really enjoy getting a lot out of and putting a lot into. So yeah. I think Lukaku could be the one to watch next season.
He's actually a thoroughly nice chap as well. He speaks about 7 languages, I think.
Does he?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, he towards the end of the season as well. He was popping up with a. Quite a few goals. I think there's one one match I remember where didn't he score like three in the last 5 minutes or something? Sort of some crazy.
That was the 5-5 against Man U, which I suppose we shouldn't really review the season without mentioning that game. Fergie's last game for Manchester, his 1,500th game for Manchester
United. And I think the first ever 5-5 draw in Premier League history.
That's right, it was apparently, yeah.
Yeah. Can I just put a word in for some goalkeepers, because I think they often get forgotten, and I just made a list of goalkeepers of the season.
Or just a list of
goalkeepers. How many, 20?
No. Interestingly, none of the keepers at the top clubs are in there, because I think the ones who play for the teams lower down the league get probably more to do. Mignolet, brilliant Sunderland, keeper at Sunderland, yeah. Really good. Vorm as well, always impressed me when I watched him. Guzan at Villa, probably the best keeper this season, and Begovic at Stoke, all very good as well. Lloris as well did well, because he was under a bit of pressure at Tottenham, wasn't it? Because he was competing with one of the best goalkeepers, I think, in the league for a number of years.
Yeah, that's right. It was Mr. Friedel.
Yeah, Brad. Yeah, Brad Friedel. Well. So I feel a bit sorry for Friedel, because whenever he played, he looked really, really great. But then Lloris was like the big money signing, and by the end of the season, he was playing more regularly, I think.
So we should shimmy on. Best signing then, I think, like I say, Michu from Swansea for $2 million from Rayo Vallecano. They'd lost Skilfi Sigurdsson in the midfield. They were looking for a kind of attacking midfielder to play behind the front man. $2 million for Michu.
Yeah, and 18 goals he scored for a debutant, changing country. That is pretty special. You've got to say Van Persie, probably the signing of the season in terms of actual impact. As well, maybe who else? Benteke as well.
Yeah,
Benteke, and I would shout out to Santi Cazorla as well.
I'll tell you what, if he has settled in nicely, next season he could be looking great. And QPR don't feature on that list.
they feature in
other lists.
All of my list of worst signings.
we've got a crack on. Brian, have you got a third clue for the?
Shall I just review the first two clues? This was an event that was won by a player ranked 125th in the world. The eventual winner said, "God wanted me to win this game. He sent the rains." And for the first time ever, the final was played on a Monday.
Okay, yeah, no, I've definitely got it now. I'm just trying to make sure I get the year right. Mm-hmm. I know exactly what happened, but I try to remember the year.
Two more clues now. As well.
So that's classic sporting event that Brian's going to be reviewing just after 7:15 tonight. Next up, it's my favourite bit of the show.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
It's time for Chris's sporting stats, sporting 105 stat. You listen to Cambridge 105, and I like to come up with something that relates to the number 105 each week. Okay, so this is my thing this week. Cambridge 105. The team that finished 105th in the English League last season were Alfreton, 13th in the conference.
Oh,
Cambridge United finished 106th.
Oh.
So that's my 105 stat for the week. Now we move back on to our Premier League.
Do you know where Alfreton is, Chris?
Review. Yes, England, I think.
It's near Derby.
Yeah. Oh, okay, there you go. But it's just a faint taste in my mouth. It's now time to get dreary and talk about the bad things about this season. And the three teams coming down to the Championship, Wigan, Reading and QPR. Now, it's just a nightmare season for QPR, no?
Yep, I don't think they've really helped themselves this season with their kind of managerial merry-go-round and their kind of transfer shenanigans that happened at the start of the season. I think they brought in too many players, to be honest.
Yeah, they won only 4 games all season.
They brought in too many players, most of whom were not very good at football. Well, certainly not cut out for this level.
Yeah, they came in with big reputations and didn't really fulfil any of them.
So Jose Bisingwa, Christopher Samba.
Yep, Jisung Park, Anton Ferdinand, Esteban Graniero.
Yeah, Tarat. I mean, I know he wasn't a signing, but he actually is quite a good player. But, you know, you can't rely on like one skillful player and a team of overpaid professionals who are clearly just in it for the money.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that was probably the, I guess, the feeling about QPR this season. They tried to splash out, but just didn't do it very well. Like, they spent a lot of money, and the team never really gelled. And the other thing, of course, flop of the season, probably Redknapp. You know, he came
That's what I've got
talking the talk. the Renaissance man, you know, the specialist at keeping teams up. He just didn't do it, though, did he?
When Harry Redknapp took over, QPR were bottom. 6 points off avoiding relegation, and at the end of the season they were bottom, 14 points off avoiding relegation. Yeah. So that's the impact that he had. Look, I'm not a fan, and so it's kind
of
nice. Yeah, so yeah. It's nice to kind of have some proof of his failings. He's obviously been successful in the past, although I don't think anywhere near as successful as some people try to make you believe. And he's only ever won one trophy in a 30-year management career, as the FA Cup with Portsmouth a few years ago.
Oof, this is like a one-mind tirade against Flash Harry.
I'm trying to be fair.
What has he ever done to you?
Trying to be fair and use facts.
Isn't the story that he's going? Where's he off now? Hasn't he been linked with some of the vacant jobs somewhere?
I think he's still at QPR, isn't he?
He is still at QPR. Yeah. He does always get linked with any job, doesn't he? And we'll see. Obviously,
he does. He seems to be the one name that's always at the top of the list when there's a managerial vacancy comes up.
I wonder what Alan Kirbishley's doing at the moment. I haven't seen him for a while.
Kerbs, yeah. But welcome back. Some Holloway's going to come back next season, isn't he? So, and we'll have Mourinho back. So some old faces back in the Premier League. Yeah. It was very disappointing for QPR. I guess Reading as well. They changed managers halfway through the season. There's a bit of a managerial sort of threesome going on, three-way, with Adkins going and McDermott leaving, Adkins coming in, and didn't really make much difference. But it's a tough job, I guess. Harder. Reading didn't have the funds that QPR had, and but they made a better fist of it, I think.
And then there are about six or seven teams who were all didn't really look great. It certainly never strung anything consistent together. But it was Wigan that were the ones that that ended up not quite getting enough points. Teams like Sunderland, Newcastle, Southampton, Stoke, looked pretty poor for long periods of the season. But it was they managed to basically be. You don't have to be great. You just need to be better than three of the teams in the league. And Wigan, Reading, and QPR went down. Wigan, are we, glad to see the back of them?
Not at all. I think Wigan plays some really nice football. Got a lot of time for Martinez. I think he sets his team up the right way. They played decent attacking football. So I was kind of sad to see them go down. It would have been nice for them to stay up. I was kind of rooting for Newcastle to go down because flop of the season for me was probably Pardew. I mean, Newcastle, big, big club. They were pretty dismal.
That's an interesting shout.
That is quite interesting.
I mean, people forget that, Pardew, he a lot was expected of him. And
Did well last season.
This season, only just. They were, with a couple of games to go, they were still in the mix. Could have gone down.
Finished 16th with a goal difference of -23. If you'd have said that at the beginning of the season, I doubt many Newcastle fans would have taken that.
Yeah, pretty dreadful season from them. Because, it's from 5th down to almost relegation. So,
or Nouveau Chateau, as people have been calling them recently.
Nouveau Chateau, because of all the French players. Yeah, and some signings that weren't that great. I think was it Sissoko and... can't remember now. But the players they brought in never quite...
A lot of signings that looked like they were going to be great. And to be honest, still could be.
Yeah,
I think they're one of those, maybe the kind of players that when they realised they weren't going to win anything, maybe took their foot off the gas a bit, but maybe start the season, if they hit the ground running. Newcastle's still got a lot of talent there, but is Pardew the man to bring it all together? Well, we shall see. I think he wouldn't be a bad bet for first managerial casualty of next season.
Yeah, that's right. I'm surprised, actually, he made it till the end of the season because a club like Newcastle, they've been through a lot of managers recently. So, but he's still there just about.
It will be hard for Newcastle to replace him with someone with better colour-matching hair, though.
Send for King Kenny.
He would have better colour-matching hair.
Yeah. I'm not a big Pardew fan. I feel the same way about Pardew as you feel about Redknapp, really. So, Newcastle, I remember, what season was it where they had that ridiculously attacking side with Ginola and Asprilla up front? That was like that brilliant season.
Yeah,
Keegan in charge.
94, 95, 96.
Yeah. And then this season, they've just been a nothing team. Like Stoke. Like, what's the point of Stoke? Every season, they sort of finish lower mid-table. What is the point of
Stoke? What's the point of Stoke?
Totally pointless team.
I might
really
cut that out and make a jingle.
Robert Huth had a rather amusing moustache for some of the season.
Oh, there's the point of Stoke.
Finally, we found
somewhere for Michael Owen to cruise through to the end of his career at as well.
Yeah,
and we finish on a high.
Okay.
I know you had loads of things you wanted to mention, Brian. So, one thing we haven't talked about yet is our game of the season. So I think we each of us have picked our favourite game of the season. But then if there's anything else that you wanted to squeeze in before we finish off on Premier League, then go for it.
So my game of the season, we've kind of already mentioned, and it's probably not the most, we may not have been the most exciting game, but it was the Manchester United win against Aston Villa, kind of in November. So Aston Villa were 2-0 up, and then Javier Hernandez came on and scored a couple of goals, and there was also a Ron Vlaar own goal as well.
Oh, anything that involves Ron Vlaar.
I love Ron Vlaar. Yeah. He's got the best name of anyone.
I'm glad he got a mention. We couldn't review the whole season without mentioning Ron Vlaar.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's kind of set up Manchester United's run to the title, I think.
Mm. Yeah, mine was over the Christmas holiday, Arsenal beat Newcastle 7-3 with Theo Walcott hat-trick, including a goal in the 90th minute. So, yeah, that was pretty exciting. So if you do get some results like that over the holiday period, because there's so many games back-to-back.
Yeah, and they do every season. There'll be at least two or three just stunning Arsenal performances where they just run riot and score loads of goals.
And you think, why can't they do this every week?
Yeah, absolutely. My game of the season was Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 3 on the 15th of December. Villa winning 3-1 at Anfield. And just as people were starting to say, oh, Liverpool look like they might push for Champions League this season, it all came crashing down. Christian Benteke scored twice, and Andreas Wijnman, and Liverpool were 3-0 down at half-time.
That's just a bit cruel, though, isn't it, Chris?
Yeah, totally. I'm quite happy with that. Just to emphasise to Liverpool fans, Aston Villa lost their next three games, 8-0 to Chelsea, 4-0 to Wigan, and 3-0 to Tottenham.
So. Of course, the 8-0 thrashing of Villa, yeah. I remember that.
It was a peak of sorts.
So is the moral to that story is don't ever beat Liverpool?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I don't think many teams are going to take heed of that. So anything else you wanted to squeeze in, Brian?
I guess a few farewells from it. It was a season, obviously, we lost Alex Ferguson, but quite a number of players retired. Jamie Carragher, retired, Michael Owen, Steve Harper, Phil Neville, Paul Scholes, Dilian Petrov through illness, all players we won't see playing next season. So yeah, in some ways it was a sort of end of an era, especially with Fergie going and so on. And then David Beckham retired, of course, from playing over in Paris, and Mark Halsey, he retired from reffing. I think he was ill as well.
Yeah. Well, and lots of new starts coming next season as well, with about five or six Premier League teams will have a new manager beginning of next season. Okay, well, that's our Cambridge 105 roundup of the Premier League season. We could have gone on for another 45 minutes probably, couldn't we? So it's time for, well, I'll tell you what, it's time for our Sporting Heroes of the Week now, and then it'll be Brian's archive feature. He'll be revealing what he's going to be talking about the next 10 minutes. So our Sporting Hero of the Week time. Brian, who have you gone for?
Well, you mentioned him earlier. It's Tommy Robredo,
the
Spaniard, who another five set win for him today. He beat Nicolas Almagro of Spain in five sets after beating Gael Monfils in the third round and Igor Sisling in the second round. Also two sets down in all those games, won them all 3-2. So Tommy Robredo, I take my slightly sweat and crusted tennis playing cap off to you, sir.
Good shout. Mike?
Well, before I get onto my sporting hero, the cricket has finished.
Have we lost?
Yes, we have lost. So we lost by about 90 runs. Trott did manage to get his century, though. So there is a silver lining to that dark cloud.
Hold on, Trott. So England lose the series.
Yep.
And one more game to go before the Champions Trophy starts in a few weeks' time.
So that leads me on to my sporting hero of the week, who is Martin Guptill, the New Zealand opening batsman.
Done well
and did the England bowlers a nightmare. So he in the last two one-day games, England were unable to get him out. He scored 103 not out and 189 not out today,
which was the highest one-day international score by a New Zealand batsman.
Yep.
In history, beating Lou Vincent's previous record. So Guptill, very very good player. I think kind of you often find a good player playing for New Zealand will be a bit underrated. Because often he'll be, he'll have men falling all around him and put in a difficult spot. But he could make the certainly one-day international team of any of the cricketing countries. I think he's a very good player.
He's not allowed though, is he?
No, not yet. No,
probably.
He's probably got a Welsh grandfather.
Well, my sporting hero of the week is Andrew Dott, who I'd never heard of until 2 days ago, but he made history in golf on the European Tour. He hit two holes in one on the same round of golf in the Nordea Masters in Stockholm on Friday. He had a hole in one at the 11th hole, and then 5 holes later, he hit another hole in one on the 16th hole. Which helped him make the cut. He only just made the cut by 2 shots because of those 2 holes in one. And then he followed up with a 67 yesterday, but 73 today. So finished 44th in the tournament. But tell you what, he'll be dining out on that for a bit.
Well, imagine that barbell though. You know, if he's having to buy,
is that the rule? You buy a round if you get a hole in one,
and the meals or something.
Yeah, if you get 2 holes. Yeah.
What do you do?
And so, yeah, okay, sporting heroes of the week. I think we should write all these down, and then at the end of the summer sports week, summer season, we'll decide who our sporting hero of the summer has been. Mine's Andrew Dott so far. What a guy, whoever he is.
You're listening to Summer Sports Week on Cambridge 105.
Every second Sunday of the month, tune in to Cambridge 105 for Our Mill Road at 9 p.m. with me, Kerry Ann Littlechild. I'll be covering the latest news and events from Cambridge's most cosmopolitan street here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
Yeah, that's later on this evening, Our Mill Road with Kerry. Back to now. Well, don't forget, actually, Rock Lit straight after us, 7 till 8. Alan will be reviewing Not Fade Away, which is a biography of Buddy Holly, written by John Gribbin. There'll be some great music between 7 and 8 today, kind of interspersed in between Alan's review, including some very rare tracks by Buddy Holly himself. So do stay tuned after Summer Sports Week for Alan Alder with Rock Lit through till 8. Okay, now it's the archive feature time. It was the man who was ranked 125th in the world won this tournament.
That's right. He said God wanted me to win. He sent the reins. The final was played on a Monday for the first time ever. I've got two more clues, but I'm going to go straight into the feature anyway. The semi-final was played over 3 days, and a crowd estimated 150,000 thronged the port of Split to welcome home the winner.
Oh, Split. Okay, Split. So he's from Croatia.
That's right.
It was Ivan Isovic.
It was, you're right.
And I'm going to say it was the 2001 Wimbledon Championships.
You're spot on. Wimbledon 2001. A tournament that lives long in many people's memories. This was the summer of 2001. Atomic Kitten. Hearsay were in the charts. As was Robbie Williams and Christine Aguilera.
Atomic Kitten were probably in the charts.
They probably were, yeah. Yeah, so I guess the story of Wimbledon 2001 is a story of three men, really, for me. Sampras, Tim Henman, and Goran Ivanišević. So Sampras had won the last 4 Wimbledons going into 2001, and he'd also won an amazing 7 of the last 8 Wimbledons. His only blip, losing in 1996, do you know who to? He lost in the quarterfinals.
Richard Krajicek.
Richard Krajicek, great knowledge, yeah. And at 6:20 p.m. on the 2nd of July 2001, the Wimbledon clock finally stopped dead for Pete Sampras. Almost after 8 years of almost total dominance, he gathered up his racket, shirts, towels, and his black bag, and he walked away, a beaten man, having lost in 5 sets in the 4th round to a 19-year-old player from Switzerland called Roger Federer.
Yeah.
Making his debut on centre court, and he'd never won a match at the championships before last week, Federer.
What's he done since then?
Yeah, where did he end up? Yeah,
it was disappeared.
It was no fluke. Federer had been the world junior number one 3 years ago and was recognised at the time probably one of the most gifted young players, and he was ranked 15th in Wimbledon 2001, but it was an extraordinary victory. Federer played with a sustained brilliance and knocked out Sampras. The King of Swing was dethroned by the Fed Express, and Sampras actually only played in one more Wimbledon after that. The following year, he came back and he lost in the 2nd round to a Swiss player called Georges Bastel, who disappeared into nowhere, as far as I can tell. And who did the rising Swiss star Federer go on to play in the quarterfinals after beating Sampras?
Well, it was, go on, Tim!
No one other than England's golden boy. Come on.
What a match that was.
Come on, Tim Henman. And this was apparently Henman's year. 2001 Wimbledon was the year Henman was going to do it. Henman started 2001 season with a ranking of 10th in the world. He came through the first 3 rounds with ease. He beat Artem Deripaska, Martin Lee, and Tsieng Sholkin. All players whose names have vanished into the mists of time.
Well, but Shulkin was quite a kind of successful doubles player for quite a long time. Yeah, but yeah, not someone that anyone would lose to.
And then he played Todd Martin in. He took five sets in the quarterfinals, and in a harbinger of what was to come later, that match against Todd Martin was spread over 2 days because a bad light stopped play. And then, of course, Henman took on Roger Federer, and he beat him in four sets. And he had to go through to his third semi-final at Wimbledon.
Well, like you say, sorry to chip in, but that was the point that season, wasn't it? That Henman, he'd always looked like he had a chance at Wimbledon, but not when Sampras was there. Sampras had been knocked out by Federer. If Henman can get past Federer, all of a sudden, the draw's opened up, he's got a real chance.
It's his to win.
It was his to win. It was.
And that was a brilliant... I remember watching the game against Federer in the pub, and it was a brilliant game, really, really close. And you're all the time thinking, oh, this guy Federer looks pretty good, doesn't he? But Henman played
exactly
really well.
And with Sampras out, it was definitely Henman's year. So the match, the semi-final against Goran Ivanišević...
Easy for you.
Ivanišević began on a Friday. It went through to Saturday and it finished on Sunday. And Henman appeared like he was actually on the brink of the final on Friday. He came from a set down. He lost the opening set, but played some dazzling tennis. And the rains came. Play was called off at 10 past 8. Henman was actually, I think, just leading 2-1 at this point. And there was a brilliant piece in the Telegraph at the time. This is on the Friday night. This is just midway through this match. Henman's on top playing sublimely, but a night time's worth of reflection could change everything.
Well, that was the... I mean, what happened was Ivanišević won the first set.
Yeah.
Henman
won the second 6-love.
Then, well, we were then thinking, oh, we want it to rain now. But then, like you say, Henman all of a sudden turned it round. Ivanišević went to pieces. And then when it finally rained, it was when Henman was in the ascendant.
That's right. He was 2-1 up in the fourth set when the rains came. And there's the final sentence of this piece said, what kind of irony would it be if Henman's quest was halted by rain? They got managed 52 minutes of play on Saturday, at which point Ivanišević took the game into a fifth set. He was leading 3-2 in the fifth. And then finally, he actually won. So as you know, he got through to the final.
And before you mention, we haven't mentioned who... Ivanišević beat in the final yet, Mike, do you remember?
Nope.
Pete Rafter.
Oh, look, it was a great game.
So on the Sunday, this was finishing off the semi-final, five of his 14 serves went for aces. And at this point, he had 186 aces. This actually, he holds the record, Ivanišević, for the most aces served in any tournament. And this was 2001 on his route to the final. And funnily enough, John Lloyd was convinced that it was the weather that stopped Henman's charge to the final. I believe he would have closed out the match when rain stopped play. But he said, I think he can come back stronger and win Wimbledon. He didn't. He got through to the semi-final the next year and lost again.
To Leighton Hewitt.
But there you go. So 125th in the world. Ivanišević was only in the tournament because he was given a wild card on the strength of his previous performances. He'd lost in the final three times to Agassi in 92 and twice to Sampras in 94 and 98. He prepared for the matches. He watched the Teletubbies in the morning. He went to the same restaurant every night and he ordered the same food. Fish soup, lemon chips, ice cream and chocolate sauce. He beat Marat Safin. In the quarterfinals, Tim Henman, as we mentioned, in the semifinals, and then it was the People's Monday. It was on a Monday, the final, because the rains had just delayed all of the games in front of 10,000 fans. They paid £40 a pop. Jack Nicholson was in the crowd, as were the entire Australian cricket team cheering on Pitt Rafter. But there you go. It was a classic game. It was five sets. The Croatian finally came through 9-7. In the fifth, he'd also double faulted on two. He had two championship points. He double faulted.
He could hardly hold the racket. He was shaking like a leaf, wasn't he? It was really incredible to watch.
Exactly. In his fourth appearance in the final, he finally did it. He'd been tagged the most talented player never to have won Wimbledon. So there you go. He went back to Croatia. Huge crowd. He appeared. He hadn't shaved throughout Wimbledon, and he stripped down his underpants when he was back in Split. He put on a new jersey, Nets, a number 3 shirt belonging to his friend, the basketball star Drazen Petrovic, and was sort of to the adulation of the crowd. So 2001 Wimbledon, Goran Ivanišević finally did it. Tim Henman couldn't make it. What a year! What a tournament!
Great stuff, Brian. That was a nicely put together little package there. I very much enjoyed that, and it was brilliant. I remember it really well. And Federer, that was
the rise of Fed.
I think he probably just went after that.
Changing of the guard, Sampras out, Federer in, and Henman doing what he does best, getting to the semis and losing.
where are we? 2 minutes to 7 now, Cambridge 105 Community Radio in your city. It's Summer Sports Week. Just enough time to tell you what's happening in the world of sports over the next 7 days or so. Obviously, we'll see the business end of the French Open, getting into the quarterfinals, the semifinals, and the final through to next weekend. So lots of French Open tennis to watch, and that's on some terrestrial telly as well, actually. The third and final One Day International between England England and New Zealand is on Wednesday, and England are playing Argentina Rugby Union on Saturday as well, actually. So that's the first of two tests across the next two Saturdays, so look out for that. The cycling criterium, the Dauphiné we mentioned, will be on all week, concluding on Sunday. Chris Froome looking to follow in Bradley Wiggins' footsteps. Wiggins won that on his way to winning the Tour de France last year. Froome would obviously like to do likewise. Next weekend also sees the Canadian Grand Prix, the next Grand Prix in the Formula One season. Have I missed anything?
England versus Brazil this evening.
And of course, England versus Brazil tonight in the Maracanã. Brazil versus England, in fact, and ready for another John Barnes 1984-esque solo goal from Theo Walcott. Get a five on him to score the first goal, except obviously don't, because that would be irresponsible of you to bet on things, especially bet on things basing them on a tip that you've heard on the radio
from Chris,
given by me. Yes. So don't do that. We'll be back next week, except we won't, because I won't be, but Brian and Mike will be. Talking about those sporting events I've just mentioned, and also the May Bumps, which is happening on the River Cam starting on Thursday this week. Thursday next week, actually. So
local
a bit of
rowing.
A preview.
Yeah,
of
local
some
rowing sporting
stuff. Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to miss that, actually, but never mind. But thanks a lot for listening, and we will be, like I say, we'll be back next week. Stay tuned to Cambridge 105, because Rock Lit with Alan is coming up next. Ezio's Songsmith Sessions on later between 10 and 12, and then Fred's House Live between 12 and 2.
We're right up your street. This is Cambridge 105.